What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome back, creeps, to the Bad Christian Podcast. We are in full swing with the remainder of the events that we're going to be doing before I have a baby and go off the grid and start working on a new Emery album for a couple of months. Emery is in Greenville, South Carolina with O Sleeper. We're going to be in Jacksonville, Tampa the next day, West Palm Beach the next day, and Orlando the next day. And then something I think is huge news is that the Labeled Podcast is sponsoring a Tooth and Nail and Bad Christian showcase at the Bad Christian Conference. So on February the 16th, Saturday in Dallas, Texas, is the show of the year. May, Emery, the Classic Crime Acoustic, and a new Tooth and Nail band that you're going to love called Empty Aisles. You have to be at this show. Go to emerymusic.com to get tickets for both of those. And also, anybody that's heading to the Bad Christian Conference gets to go to that show for free, of course. Tickets are available there at badchristiancon.com. I'm going to run down the lineup with you one more time before we move on. The conference is going to have Propaganda, Aaron Gillespie, Derek Webb, Brandon Robertson, Autumn Miles, and Dave, Jacob, and Zach from May. And a lot of these people are going to be, you know, going through their deconstruction experience and their stories and things they've changed their mind on and where they're at today. I think it's going to be incredible. Again, Dallas, Texas, February 15, 16, and 17. Special event. Come meet the people in the community that you listen to this podcast with all the time. Make the trip. It'll be worth it, I promise. Today's show is sponsored by Beachbody On Demand. Get in shape with me and Toby this year by texting Bad Christian to 303030. You'll get full access to the entire Beachbody On Demand platform, including the 14-day results plan. Just text Bad Christian to 303030. Again, that's Bad Christian to 303030. And today's show is also sponsored by our new sponsor, Joybird. See how Joybird is revolutionizing online furniture shopping. Get 25% off your first order at joybird.com/badchristian and enter the code badchristian at checkout. Let's do it.
Oh, hell yeah, God showed up. I don't give a shit what I put in my body.
You don't ever talk to me that way.
So if you've never done oral, then you're extrovert.
No, girl, it's my pleasure.
I showed my dad my penis when I was 25 years old. You don't get more honest than that.
3, 2, 1, got my Miller Lite. I don't need you this time, Joey.
Okay.
God in
yeah,
heaven.
Joey, you're actually unnecessary on the beatbox, and let me tell everybody why, because we're joined in virtual studio by some friends today. This should be a great one. We've got Aaron Lunsford. Everybody knows who he is. He's from As Cities Burn. He's the they know him from the Nashville comedy scene and beyond. And then also we've got another guest.
He started
today.
Troll University. Oh.
I'm going to make you guys take the beatbox in a second when I intro you, and then we'll get to talking.
Ooh.
And then we also have Ryan Rado. So Ryan Rado is, if you're unfamiliar with him, maybe there's a description in the show notes that you've already read, but I'll just tell you the way I think about Ryan Rado. I've been working on the Labeled podcast a ton lately, and then I'm always talking in the Facebook groups about Tooth and Nail stories and all this stuff and the Christian music and tons of story sharing. And Ryan Rado comes up a lot. He's got a ton of stories and legends. He's worked with a ton of bands. He's been a manager. He's been, you know, he's been on stage at Cornerstone a time or two for a thing or two. And almost everybody that's been around the music scene knows who Ryan Rado is. And has
and
some,
now he
some
has his own album coming out. And that's one of the reasons he's here to talk today. So I thought it'd be really fun to have these both these dudes on. Lunsford was just in Franklin.
You know,
hanging out at Whole Foods or something. And I was like, just come on over.
Well,
I was like,
well,
just come on over to a podcast.
You'd be in the wrong situation. Since Ryan has an album coming out and is a performer also, and Aaron is a drummer, there's no reason to have Joey do the beatbox. So let's take that again. Kick it, Aaron.
Aaron.
And do some vocals, Ryan.
Got vocals,
Ryan. One time, man, I had the freaking can of fucking Miller Lite, and I had 16 of them. You know what I'm saying? And I felt real light, and Ryan Lite with light. Let's get nasty.
Wow.
Okay, now we are rolling. Now there's just a matter of what do y'all want to talk about today.
Jeez,
Aaron, do you think of drums in beatboxing terms? Like when you think of a, like I'm going to create a drum beat for As Cities Burn. Do you sit, it's really funny for me to think about you going, ooh. Do you do that?
I'm more of a lap drummer.
Hit something.
And a steering wheel drummer, not as much of a beatboxer. I used to try to do Justin Timberlake's beatbox at the end of one of those NSYNC songs. That was pretty cool.
Which NSYNC song?
I don't even remember the name of the song now.
Was it, which record was it on?
It was off Celebrity.
Yeah, that was the shit. Yeah. That record was awesome.
How old are you, Ryan?
God dang it. I'll be 42 in June, 41.
Oh, so we're the exact same age.
Oh, really?
You seem younger than me.
Amen.
That's why I was thinking, I figured y'all liked NSYNC because it came after my time.
Well, I had a younger girlfriend back then.
I thought their later stuff was actually quite good and moving in a good direction artistically.
Justin Timberlake. Seriously?
Yeah.
I'm not,
baby girl, you're gone. That song?
I don't remember that one.
Reba, was NSYNC or like boy bands like your thing?
Lower middle school.
Nice.
Middle school, wow.
Did you have posters and stuff?
Probably.
Did you like New Kids on the Block?
That was past her time.
That was a little bit before. Yeah. It was like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
Or before her time.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey, I'm Ryan, Reva. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Last time Ryan was on the show, it was just me and him in the room. Yep. And I mean,
it was cool.
Everybody knows you have Tourette syndrome.
Oh, yeah. That's on the forefront of my personality.
Well, that's not exactly everybody knows.
If you listen to the other episode, if you listen to the previous episode, you know.
Joey, how are you?
Hey, Ryan, just to jump right into a little bit of awkwardness.
Yeah, Joey's going to say what anything that you could have ever done awkward, Joey's way worse.
Have we met before, Joey?
We haven't done two episodes with Ryan, Toby.
It was just Toby and I.
I tell you what, I feel like I know Toby you because that episode was so good. You guys just knocked it out of the park.
It was a good time,
But how would you feel if I, like, seriously, you don't know me that well.
Yep.
What if I just started making fun of your Tourette's? Like, would you take that as a joke because Toby and Matt's around, or you're just not that sensitive of a person, or would that be really because I wouldn't, but if I did, would that offend you?
But would you, though?
Yeah, he would. He loves making fun of people.
Okay, let me ask you this question first.
Yeah.
So are you going to come with a joke that is typical, like fuck, fuck, shit, shit, like you've seen in the movies?
Hacky.
Or are you going to dig a little deeper and hit me where it counts?
No, I think the former for sure.
Exactly. Okay. Then prepare for some retaliation. So let's try it.
I never thought about that. Like you probably, that probably is, people go the simplest low bar, stupid shit.
It's like it happened the other night in Columbia. Really? Yeah. It's like someone we were talking about, I was sitting at a dinner and someone was talking about, God, do I want to tell a story? Anyway, yeah.
I'm gonna tell a story.
So we were, I was sitting there with a buddy of mine and I don't quite know what we were talking about, but, then I reached over and hit him in the leg or whatever, not the dong, cause that does happen. So he's developed a pretty good tactic, just locking my knee up with his fingers, just squeezing. Like if I do it, and he's like, he thinks that will stop the tip.
Weird. You know?
It's cool though, but it turns into a joke. I kind of dig it in a weird way. He's a cool dude. So the other person over here, I can't remember what we were talking about. And she goes, and he doesn't even have a diagnosis. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that was a pretty cheap shot. A, and B, if I retaliated the way I wanted to retaliate, then it would have made the whole room. It would have been a bomb in that way. You know what I mean? So I kind of have to. Uh-huh.
What help me understand that. What is the typical joke and what does she say and why was that a low blow?
I can't get into it. Cause it's a little too
personal.
Well, it's a little too close to home as far as relationships are concerned. So I don't remember the joke, but I remember the jab. It was kind of a cheap shot what's his excuse? He doesn't have a diagnosis.
Okay.
And so in my mind, I was like, man, okay, your husband's here. And you're there. A, I'm not going to respond to this because it would make the whole room awkward. And B, your husband's here and I'm waiting for what he would deem to be inappropriate that I would say for him to jump in. So in actuality, you're making these little cheap shots with no possible retaliation available. But what I really wanted to do was hit the low blow. Even though it seemed to be a joke, there was no way to respond to this because of the social contract that was happening in the room. So when people start to make fun of me, it's just like, okay, I either have to brush it off or I just hit pretty low because I'm not really a low ball type of dude. So it's like, I really have to I really have to read the room well and the personality of the person.
It's interesting in that moment though, mm-hmm. like, was when that happens, mm-hmm. your brain, the way it works, did you still have to like do a tick or something to stop yourself from anything?
No,
like
no.
You were able just to go, I'm not going to retaliate. I'm not going to say anything mm-hmm. mean. And you just were able to move on?
That's a great question because a lot of this disorder is brought on by stress. And I mean, I had four stepdads growing up, so I'm built of all these sub personalities. So, yeah. And a lot, you know, violence and stuff like that and drugs and all the stuff that makes up a decent movie. So it's like, and I said decent. So it's not about, it's so hard to, as you say, deconstruct because there are certain things that bring on certain tics, and I'm pretty good at self-analysis to kind of figure out in my subconscious yeah. where these tics are coming from. So did I want to say something to her that was a tic? No, I didn't, because my focus was so narrowed that I wanted to think of a retaliation that would get the person to go away. And the tics are a very surface level of a response of some making an objection to somebody's kind of either slight or someone's abuse or someone's words. But the further I've dug into my subconscious, which is possible when you start realizing where you go wrong and the truth about your intentions, it seems like I'm able to control the tics a lot more. Aaron, do you remember when it was bad?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well,
we're
I was just
going
to say, I've never yeah. thought to like make a joke at your expense.
What the fuck? But... Yeah, right, dude.
No, I never.
You're a fucking dude. I'm playing. Go ahead. No, yeah.
I'm
playing.
No, I'm saying like I never thought like I would never.
Incredible.
I would never think like I want to make fun of Rado.
Right.
But there's certainly stuff about you that is funny that we
like. What, Aaron? Let's do it.
I'm not saying like laugh at, like laugh with, like just.
I ain't laughing.
Like your phone, stuff with your phone.
I know.
No, you
meant,
like
funny.
You would take your yeah. phone,
toss
like,
it.
Your expensive ugh. Phone, and you just throw it in the air. And
really?
Yeah, hit it face. On the window.
Your new fan, and, your new phone. I mean, you
new
would just
phone.
Have to do that.
And he just like throw, or he would take your phone from you, and throw it. And like so stuff like that, you have to laugh at, or else
right,
like yeah. it'd be like.
What the fuck, bro?
Yeah. So right, it's just, man. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's not funny. Like, oh, let me make fun of Ryan.
All right, folks. I'm not huge into New Year's resolutions, but I really want to get in healthier shape. I've been feeling like the last year, 2018, was kind of rough on my body. And this is a year where I want to get healthy, not just lose weight, not just get more muscles or whatever, but actually get healthy. And that's where a Beachbody On Demand comes in. And I want you to take the challenge with me. This year, I'm going to use Beachbody On Demand, and I'd love for you to join me as well. I mean, Beachbody is just so easy. You can watch on your phone, on your TV, however you want to watch it. They have so many different programs like P90X, Insanity, 21 Day Fix, T25, which is Sean T, 25 minutes a day. You can find 25 minutes to do a workout, and I think that's where I'm going to start. They got Brazil Butt Lift, Pio, Hip Hop Abs, 3-week yoga retreat. So why don't you join me? Why don't you sign up? And when I say sign up, guess what? It's free. Right now, our listeners can get a free trial membership, including their new 14-day results plan, where you can lose up to 9 pounds. So you're going to be immediately seeing some results, but in a good, healthy way that is going to just maybe change our lifestyle. I think that's what I want. I want a lifestyle change where I look better, I feel better, and I am better. Beachbody On Demand is where it's at. It's what I'm going to be doing. I'd love for you to join me. Like I said, it's free. You will get full access to the entire platform for free, all the workouts, the nutrition information, the results plan to get you super fast results if that's what you want, and support totally free. I mean, you have nothing to lose except for weight and, you know, stress and anxiety, and, you know, you'll gain feeling better and all those things. So let's do it together. I think it'll be pretty fun. We can talk about it in the BC Club or whatever, but I'd love for you guys to sign up and let's see if we can get healthy this year. Text Bad Christian to 303030303030. Bad Christian, text that word Bad Christian to 303030303030. We're gonna get in shape.
It's there is humor aspect of it. There has to be humor involved.
Is there any fear in that? Like when you grab somebody's phone,
yes.
And that compulsion, are you like, oh no, I wish to God I wasn't doing this?
See, there's two aspects to that. One is that, and two is like, how can I make this into, oh, that's funny and that's cute. I hope they trust me. God, I'm not trying to be an asshole.
Yeah.
But I dance in between there. So it's like it's a little difficult. Because I can see how that would be very difficult to interact with on an ongoing basis. So that I'm not quite thinking of like, are they really going to be mad at me? The overall thing is, are they ever going to want to talk to me again? It's a hard battle. And so it's like the more that I develop myself and as an individual, the more those things go away. Like when we were talking and I know it was before the holidays and stuff, I was kind of obsessing that there was a possibility that you might have been avoiding me. Allow me to say that online. And, and so that's my own obsessive compulsive.
So Ryan texted me a few times about, but to his credit, I didn't think that at all. That's what I'm saying.
Awesome.
Like I was doing, you know, Christmas stuff or on tour, or we were playing Chicago. So I just didn't get back to you quickly. My fault. Like I was actually just, I didn't get back to you.
Sure.
I didn't feel that at all, but that probably stems from all your relationships in the past.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Like every relationship you have, you have to guard yourself because of Tourette syndrome. You have to guard yourself. Like, does this person like me? Because I have this thing that's going to be
intrusive.
Sometimes intrusive. Intrusive is such a good word.
It is. Yeah. You know,
it feels that way to you.
It does sometimes, but like I said, the more that I'm the further I take the distorted thought in my mind, the worse I get. So, you know, it's like that ideological sentence of take every thought captive. I mean, it's true, because when I have these obsessive thoughts of abandonment and neglect and stuff, I live there. You know what I'm saying? But then it seems I always am shown like a few days later that it may not be the way of my polar thinking, marginalized thinking, excuse me. It may not be that way. So Ryan, maybe you could back up from yourself and take a wider look at it. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, that's and I appreciate you being just, in my mind, I automatically go to, oh my God, here he comes again.
Well, the thing that popped up in my mind is I could kind of, you apologized on text or whatever. I'm not, you know, but what's interesting about it is because you have this, you also think about that too when you're texting me. For example, you know how many people text me?
Oh, totally. No, I get what you mean. Like,
and they don't,
that too.
They don't care at all.
Right.
Like there are a million people that text me, hey, I'd love to do the podcast, or I'd love to do this, or can Emery come here, or, you know, whatever be. And so what I thought was interesting is we are friends, and so it would never bother me no matter what. If you texted me 100 times in a day, I wouldn't care.
Yeah, think.
Maybe at some point it would get weird.
Yeah, right,
but I'm
saying,
for the most part, I just don't care because we know each other and we're friends and all that stuff. And you're doing something that I haven't gotten back to you for.
Sure.
With. But it's interesting, like, that people don't do that. Like for example, right before you guys got on and we started recording – I was trying to figure out the recording of this and our mics and all that stuff. And my butt crack was kind of, I had a little bit of,
I had a little bit of
plumber crack. Right. And Ryan sticks his finger in my plumber crack.
Wait a minute. I merely touched your underwear waistband.
Yeah. Okay. So I felt something in my butt crack, but here's what's really bizarre to me.
Pretty good.
Like, I don't know if that was a tick or just your personality. Right. I have that.
It's tricky.
I promise you, Matt's butt crack, Matt gets plumber crack all the time. And when I see it, my impulse is I have to stick my finger
there. Why don't you let it rip?
I do sometimes, okay, and Matt gets super mad at me. There's so, when Matt, the funniest thing that happens is there's always times like when we're on tour where our bus needs something like oil change
Your
in the generator, my butt needs something, but the bus needs something. Like Matt's working on like fixing lights in the bus or the generator, changing the oil and whatever, and his butt crack, just a little bit of plumber's crack, and I see it and I go,
so
if I just want to stick my finger in there, and then I do 50% to 75% of the time.
Right.
And you did that to me, and I was like, oh.
Jumped a little bit.
It got me a little bit. And it made me happy, though, because I was like, oh, cool. I'm not the only one.
You see a butt crack,
sticking your finger in it. I don't care what butt crack it is. When there was a plumber that came to our house a couple years ago, and he had unreal plumber crack, and I was like, in my mind, I thought, I have to stick my finger in that.
I know how it
It'd be so hilarious. God. I love it. It'll be so awesome. Is it that, like, do you think I'll stick my finger in Toby's butt crack and this is going to be funny? Is there any thought or is it just impulse?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think it's testing the boundary, you know? I think it's testing the limit of where I can, is this person going to continue to stay here? And that goes back to, what the fuck are you laughing?
No, I'm playing too. No, I'm just thinking about, hey, you've touched me in the balls three times since we've been here. Yeah.
What'd you feel about?
Do you like it, think though? About it at all.
Yeah.
That's, to me, just sick. Being that
it feels more safe.
Thank you.
Like feels safe.
Like, I just Ryan's touching my balls, and that's just, when I'm hanging out with Ryan.
Wait, we can't hear Matt.
Gonna touch my balls.
We can't hear you.
We can't hear you, bro.
He's fixing it.
Okay.
But so, you're right. Like that's what I think is interesting. Like when you touch my top of my butt crack, I just thought, oh, that's just Rado.
Okay. That's cool.
Like it felt like, safe. I didn't think you were doing it for any, I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at. Like, is there anything there that's like if I do it to Matt, it literally is to antagonize him a little bit.
I think maybe it might be that, but I want to know where the boundary is, and it's served me in really interesting ways well, and other ways it hasn't. And I know I'm learning who can hang and who I can hang with and who can't, you know? And so it's like, but I'm wondering now that we talk about it, if it is a subtle, dominance thing on my part. Hear me out. Yeah. So I'm wondering if when I do the tick, am I releasing so much of my personality through every tick, even though sometimes I can control it, sometimes I can't, depending on stress and different situations. So I'm wondering if it is like, you're not going to compete with this part of my personality, because either you'll go away, you'll be freaked out, or you'll be intrigued and you'll want to know more. So at that point, I'm in more control. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so that comes to me.
Can y'all hear me now?
Yeah, yes. Brother.
Okay, yep. So that is extremely fascinating to me because, well, first of all, when Toby says he puts his finger in my butt, it's only when I'm doing something where I am concentrating. If anybody wants to put their hand up my butt, I don't care.
Isn't that interesting?
I'm very
That's
good
true.
That.
Yeah, no, you're no right. Issue. You're right. If you were sitting on the bus, whatever, and I did it, you wouldn't care at all.
He said, good "Hey, point, Matt, can dude. I put two fingers up your crack deep?" I go, "Okay." If
That's
people
a good
laugh
observation.
About it. Hey, let's do it.
What if do you I'm think about that?
Focusing on something, I'm going to get immediately angry. But what I think is crazy about what Ryan's saying is, it's so
rephrase that.
It's so interesting because I think it really is like a. I mean, I feel that strongly, like the same. I feel like what you're doing is playing with the boundary and trying to establish something and try to know something. And that's a feeling I think everybody has. Mm. And I think it's like it's really in the territory of being authentic. It's like you have a compulsion to be authentic or something, which is in a way a positive, because I bet you all your relationships are with people who
they're not
can
surface.
Accept you for who you are. Whereas there's a lot of people that have a ton of relationships and nobody knows the real them, but they know you.
Right.
And they accept you or they don't. And I love that. So, I
well,
mean,
here,
I mean,
Matt,
that's a weird way of
thing.
Looking at
this
it, but.
Is, it. No, it's a great way of looking at it. It's encouraging to me, but it lends itself to isolation and loneliness, you know? So it's like I can deal. I love people and I'm working on not being a people pleaser as much as I have been. And so it's really strange even though people know where I'm at, know what they're going to get, know that I'm not going to use their insecurities against them, it's almost like if there's too much of that and too much authenticity and depth, a lot of even my good friends have a hard time with it, you know, and a level of intensity. I do have a level of intensity that I have that is unmatched. No, I'm just kidding, man. No, I just suck sometimes because it's like, you know, sometimes certain people don't want to be around that all the time. They just want to keep it light and feathery. And if you have any suggestions,
like when you say intensity, what do you mean? Like if you're hanging out with a buddy,
yep,
or something, or a friend or whatever, like what's the intensity that you're worried that would push them away?
Okay. So here, my psychologist and I were talking about this. Like we were talking, it was a couple months ago, and he said, Ryan, most people, if you had a level of to scale depth, he goes, most people to 8. And if you had to scale that with people, in a beginning of a conversation, most people start at 1 and 2. You start at probably 4 and 5. And I think that just sometimes it might come on as inauthentic, like you're trying to, and I'm ad-libbing too into my own thought, but I don't really waste a lot of time because I want to know what I'm dealing with someone. And it's kind of selfish in a way, if I really think about it, because I push people into seeing if I can hang with them and they can hang with me. And at least that's my view of it. And I'd like
Toby
to change
does
that
the exact same thing always,
really?
Though. He doesn't have, I mean, he does it in different ways, but
why?
That,
like
I mean,
how?
You know, and you're not summed up by Tourette's either.
Right. No,
like, that's just
no,
about
no.
you. A lot of that is actually you, the way you
true.
Are too.
But
it's funny that you're right, Matt. Like when I think about you, mm-hmm. I think I'm getting 90% you, and there's 10% of something that maybe you aren't sure. full control of or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, and so I promise, I've told people this. Mm-hmm. It's so relaxing for me to be around you.
Well, blessing. God
like, I just feel like, woo, oh, okay. Man, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you touching my plumber's crack,
you can be
it
yourself.
Makes me go, okay, we are just in relax mode,
cool.
boy.
Well, that's a
good
blessing.
Lord. I'm just, I don't, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like, last time when we did the interview, you kept, you were trying to stop yourself, but you would shoot me these sideways birds or whatever.
Yeah,
and I was
right,
just like,
right,
it was
right,
so great. I just thought, like, part of me, I know this sounds horrible.
No,
you're not going to agree with
me
at all.
It's okay.
Part of me is like, man, I love that you get to do that. Like there are so many, there are so many thoughts in my head.
I've heard that before. Yeah, I've heard that before.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, good. I'm not saying, I hope you don't take that
Toby's
condescending.
Toby's jealous of almost every disability.
Well, I'm jealous because like in a way, now, let's see, I want to word this right.
Full thought. Say how you feel.
In a way, it feels so free. Like, golly, man, I love that. Like, because the things that I'm fighting against in my head, like I just feel like, oh, like I'm so why am I I'm fighting and I have to say this the right way or I have to you're
I
right
still
like,
do that
you
too.
Said it in a really good way. I think you're right. Maybe I push boundaries because I want to see if somebody's fucking real or not.
Copy.
Like, you know what I mean, like that makes a so much sense to me, because if I can push back on somebody and they stay, we're fucking friends.
Yeah,
and,
copy.
And you probably, I don't know if you're this way, but if somebody does that, I'm with them to the end. You know what I mean?
If you can have a reasonable conversation even after a blow up and you guys can speak authentically with each other, it strengthens the relationship. You know?
Right. Like, like for example, everybody, Aaron, Joey, Matt, and Reva have all had knockdown, drag out arguments or crazy moments with me personally, right? And they're still here, and we're still together for some whatever that is.
It's
I don't know what that is, and I don't think they appreciate that necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if that's like it helps me a lot. Like when you say boundaries, maybe that's what it is. Like I felt the same way. Like I didn't have like you had 4 different stepdads, and that affects you a ton.
Sure,
my family wasn't. It was very strange at expressing love or support. Mm-hmm. Almost none.
And that's
of that.
Equally as strange as me having 4 stepdads. You know, so nothing is like super strange anymore.
Yeah,
you know?
you might be right,
but I get what you mean. Though.
So what I thought, like, I mean, I would act out or do crazy stuff because I was like, well, the crazier I get, maybe that would spark something in them to prove that they're here for good or something like that. I don't know. It's bizarre.
All right, let me tell you guys about a new sponsor that I'm very excited about, and they're called Joybird. As a lot of you guys know, I'm somewhat of an amateur builder. I like to clown around with saws and tools and sandpaper and finishes and stains. I just love that stuff, so I pay a lot of attention to furniture and furniture building. Now, I hadn't heard, but there's a revolution in online furniture shopping, and Joybird is the company behind it all. When I told my wife that Joybird was a sponsor, she should check it out. She's like, oh, I already know. Their stuff's awesome. And it is. Joybird believes that you should never settle when it comes to your home furnishings, and that you should also have the freedom to be boldly original. So from an idea to reality, they empower you to create the space in your home and the furniture that brings you joy. Okay, so here's how it works. You can turn your ideas into reality with hundreds of styles and options, from mid-century modern, which we love, to contemporary classics, customizable, and a crazy amount of fabric choices too, like leather, velvet, every color imaginable, and a wide range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options available too. They do free personal design consultants to help you nail down the perfect design. So if you can't tell what I'm talking about yet, this stuff is high quality. In fact, each Joybird piece is made by hand with care and precision, using high-quality hardwood and responsibly sourced materials to fit your exact specifications. They've got a limited lifetime warranty included, and here's the crazy part. You can design this whole thing, skip the furniture store, and bring the showroom straight home to you. Sit on it, sleep on it, break it in. If you don't love your Joybird, you could return for a full refund. Hassle-free, in-home delivery. They'll even remove all the packing materials when they get there. And did you hear what I'm saying here? Free returns within 2 weeks of delivery, so you really have nothing to lose. So you got to go see how Joybird is revolutionizing online furniture shopping. Create the furniture that brings you joy today at joybird.com/badchristian. Go to joybird.com/badchristian and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the promo code badchristian.
One question I don't know if we hit on last time that I kind of wanted to know, and then also I do want to get into the album right after this.
Sure.
But when was the first time you noticed this? Were you the first person to notice it, or did somebody tell you?
Oh, I think it was, I didn't know what I was doing I didn't know that there was a distortion in my behavior, and the tic started to manifest right after my mom's first divorce, and I started shaking my head and squeaking like that.
Really?
And, yep. And like I said, it was chaos. It was chaos in a lot of ways, and our home life. And I noticed that I was shaking my head, and there were comments made, and but then my mom saw a doctor talk about Tourette syndrome on Oprah, and yeah, right. Thanks, Ope. So anyway, she took me to the doctor, and I remember sitting in the doctor's office. I felt like I was under a chair because I did not want the doctor to say that I had this. I'm like, no. Like the visceral response in my chest, that's stressful. Like, but then after they said it, and equally after they said, there is no cure, we don't know much about it, you have to take medication. That ambiguity of what you're dealing with, the syndrome aspect of it, man, that'll rock you. You know, it was interesting. I was listening to you can't petition God with prayer, that driving up here.
Yeah.
And when they did the study, the $2.4 million study that the guy was talking about, Mark was his name, maybe?
Yeah.
Anyway, they were talking about the people who had the ambiguity of, to deal with the ambiguity of someone saying, we will pray for you. And my understanding was that the people that were going to pray for them did it away from them. So the person that was sick had to deal with not knowing if someone was actually going to pray with them, rather than having people there that would pray with them. So you have a group to work with. So it's like the feeling of isolation and being left alone. I thought that really hit me, and it kind of goes along with not knowing what to do with a syndrome. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's funny about Oprah. Hey. I had 150 conversations start with my mom growing up. She said, you know, I was watching Oprah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Your mom was very informed by Oprah?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's always like, yeah, well, on Oprah the other day, you know. But it was, you're right.
Your mom nailed it.
You know, that generation, man. That's cool. Arkansas, Little Rock. Wait, no.
Hey, Ryan, out of curiosity,
was it
probably about 10 minutes ago, you were talking and mm-hmm. then you turned and you said, and yes, I did say decent. Was that like a tick or were you, because it
no, that was
little...
a good call. I remember what you were saying. I didn't want to be, that was cognizant. I didn't want to be, I didn't want to make the assumption that my life would make a brilliant movie. I wanted to, that was an exercise in humility because I think it might make a decent movie.
Yeah. It's just interesting how unnoticeable it mm-hmm. is. And especially it seems like this would be somewhat of a stress inducing mm-hmm. situation to be on like a podcast. I guess maybe mm-hmm. it's because you're amongst friends that
I enjoy it
more...
too. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know,
gotcha.
And the more that I tell the truth about it, the less I deal with it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So my psychologist had me, can you see me right now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm having this tick. So my psychologist, when I first started going to see him, his name's Dodge and he's a good dude. Really good dude. So he would ask me, what does that tick mean? And I was like, how dare you? You fuck. You know what I'm saying? So like, so then we started breaking down. Tell me what that tick is. What is that tick saying? And that was because it's a psychosomatic response, you know what I'm saying, to, like I said, to objection and stuff like that. And so when we started breaking down what I think the tics meant and where they manifest in my body, the stress, the points of stress, I'm able to further dig into the subconscious and take a trip. Well, that works too, because mushrooms take a trip in the subconscious. So anyway, so you like... I'm able to trace back how the tick manifested and what brought it on. It's pretty cool, you know? It's pretty cool.
So that's interesting. I mean, all this stuff is mm-hmm. so interesting just from a mental health perspective because mm-hmm. I don't understand Tourette's, but I do understand depression, OCD,
compulsion,
and all those sorts of things. And it really is like what you just said as far mm-hmm. as tracing the tick, I do the same thing with depression-inducing thoughts. And mm-hmm. sometimes I can't trace it. Sometimes I find myself in a very dark, dark place, and I'm like, I don't know how I got here. I can't. And then there are times where I can trace that son of a bitch and get to the root of it and not be depressed. It's crazy.
Well, then it's your job to get out of it. Even though you traced it and identify it, you have to apply the work to get out of it. And that's a bitch right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you have any the craziest time your tick got you into the craziest situation?
Long story.
Do
we got anything?
I don't know. I mean, the only one I don't even know if it's a tick, but I just remember some of the more interesting situations.
Let's
where it'd be like we were on the road and we were staying with some people and you said to them, and I don't even know what this has to do with Tourette's.
It sounds like Here we are again.
No, it sounded like a different situation problem. And we were about to go to bed, and you said to the people, "Do you have guns?"
I did. What the?
Listen.
Oh,
you said, "Listen."
I'm listening.
You said,
sorry.
Do you have any guns? And are they locked?
Well, that's there. You go.
And
yeah.
we were like, "What the fuck? Why are you talking about this?
That's fucking awesome."
This wasn't a thing that you would like. Hey, sometimes like I sleepwalk and maybe I'll grab a gun or something.
I mean, that could have been it. That could have been it.
So I think it was a sleepwalking thing.
God,
but
man.
We were all just sitting there like, why is Rado asking?
You sleepwalk too?
Sometimes. Not as much anymore.
But you seemed very concerned about it. And I just remember thinking, all right, well, that's a whole nother thing.
Well, thinking about it, it could have been like, then again, putting more emphasis on me.
Okay.
Wanting to have some peculiar attention for a peculiar reason.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
I understand that.
So that's really introspective of you, David. Yeah. This insight you have about your own motivations is so much deeper than most people have. That's fascinating.
I agree.
I think,
you know,
I
identified the Joey's comment there about the decent thing. Like, you know what you're doing inside your own head because you've had to be mindful of it. It's pretty neat.
And that's a prison sometimes, Matt. You know what I'm saying? It becomes a prison because the deeper and I'm not saying I'm the deepest person. I'm just saying like, I can only relate to my experience and my experience with other people and in other people. So it's like the deeper you get into that subconscious shit, it is terrifying because you start to realize how many sub personalities make you up. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. And
it's so that makes sense why people don't do it. It's not cool.
Right. I can imagine those people that you're staying with. You're like, do you have guns? Are they locked? And they said, yeah, we have some. They're locked. And you go, okay, should be fine. Then.
Sounds good.
Carry on. Should be good.
Right. Yeah, where's dinner at?
No, that's locked. Good. No, hey, nothing to worry about.
Hey, Ryan, have you ever, because people know you have Tourette's, have you ever made a mistake but then blamed it on the Tourette's because there was no other way out? Say, I know that was huge, but I couldn't help
it. Can you hear me?
Like, have you ever blamed it on that?
Okay. Yes. Anymore, I don't do that. I think when I was more afraid of the rejection that would come from the Tourette's only, I would do that, and that would be a scapegoat, and that was before I felt like I was developed in a way that I could tell the truth about it, you know?
All right, so
yeah, let's hit it.
You got an album coming out.
Yeah, Albies.
Do you know when it's coming out?
Next week. I kind of want to say, hey, my album's coming out next Friday, the 11th.
Next Friday, the 11th.
On Spotify and all that stuff. It's called Make It Perfect. And
you do everything? What do you do in this?
Well, I play guitar and did the vocals, and then I had some friends play the other instruments. So it was.
What's your motivation for putting out? Is this your first record?
Yeah, myself.
You just wanted to put out a record, or what?
Yeah, I moved out to Columbia a bunch of years ago and started dinking around on guitar. And I'm not a guitar player, and it's like, but I started playing guitar and putting parts together. And I was like, well, shit, I might be able to write some songs, because I'd always relied on other folks to be in bands with and write the songs. But I was a singer of those bands, but I wanted to put it out to tell myself that I could do that, because I've always idolized, I mean, you guys, man, I'm serious. Like, I always wanted to be in the band, life. And I wanted to have that notoriety of being a musician. So I still look up to you guys, like, that you did that and do that. That's the tough life, and it's exhilarating and meaningful and sometimes not. And it's like, I wanted to have that, and I think this was kind of a proof to myself that I could put out music of my own and express myself, but I had to sacrifice the idea of having much crazy success with it, because I'm not going to go on tour. You know what I mean?
What's it about? Like, what do you want to write about? Are they just each unique songs?
I think so. You know, yeah. I think it's more self-analysis than anything, and cultural analysis. And I have a song on there called Bullhorn. It's about my own, the ways in which I act like a social justice warrior and deny that I'm acting that way. And it's kind of a finger point to the whole postmodern crowd, and being able to shift your perspective, ever shift your belief system, so it works only for you, you know? Yeah. And I think that's pretty
Tell
dangerous.
Me more about that. That's an interesting take. Mm-hmm. I'm interested
sure.
in that take.
Yeah, me
Tell
too.
Me more
yeah.
about that.
Yeah, I'm glad we can get into it. To me, it seems like you have these sets of, and I listen to Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson and Brett Weinstein like all the time when I'm
How
working.
How dare you?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But they all act, they all operate from a structure, some sort of like, be it kind of different structures, but they're not shifting constantly to their belief system to make it work for their own, their selfish gain, as it were. And it seems like the postmodern thought, and as well as the Marxist thought, is the postmodern idea is nothing has a structure. Their hierarchies are socially constructed. Meaning, and when I say structure, I mean like a deeper structure that is beneficial to mankind. So, and in these hierarchies, they're only based on power. So it's like, so when you deconstruct all that stuff, nothing matters and you fall into some nihilism, you know? So it's like, I'm trying to come to the idea of, the more that I can analyze my own intentions and behavior, the more that I'm seeing what has value and what is detrimental to the human race. So I think when you constantly fragment people and put them into these groups, like the group identities, I feel like people are not realizing that the more they put them into these group identities, the more that we're fragmenting the human race into, it seems like a nothingness, you know? So that seems really, that seems really scary to let go of these ancient structures. And I'm not saying don't update them. And I'm not saying don't pick them apart and look at them and have reasonable conversations about them. I'm saying the more that you allow your beliefs to shift so it only serves your ideology and narrative, that's when you cannot, you don't know what you're dealing with. You're dealing with smoke and mirrors at that point. And I think that's pretty dangerous.
Well, we got one more sponsor spot for today, and this one is pretty cool. Tooth and Nail is paying us to advertise the Labeled podcast. So this whole thing is great. I just had to say that what Bad Christian and Tooth and Nail have been able to do together, as in not compete, but work together, has just been so much fun. It's so cool. And one of the things that we collaborate on is the Labeled podcast, who's sponsoring the concert at Bad Christian Conference, for instance. And Tooth and Nail is always advertising on this podcast for their band. So check out Empty Isles, for instance, who's going to be at that show in February in Dallas. But this ad that they're paying for today is for me to promote the Labeled podcast, which is the stories, legends, and rumors of Tooth and Nail Records. I've been trying to figure out how to make a podcast that's narrative-based and really kind of gets at the story behind and the philosophy behind and the origins of what's going on in this music scene that I've been lucky enough to be a part of. And what I realized in doing it is, man, I missed out on the whole beginning history of this punk, indie, hardcore Christian music scene. And I've really enjoyed trying to learn the art of, you know, narrative storytelling and stuff like that, especially as it pertains to a podcast. So we pulled down all the previous episodes we'd done of Labeled and started fresh on a 20-episode arc that covers history of Tooth and Nail and the punk and indie scene and how they got related to the Christian music scene, and then what happened when Tooth and Nail gets huge, and then EMI and all this money and power gets involved, and then all the way back to Tooth and Nail becoming an independent label again. It's quite a nice an interesting story with lots of twists and turns, and we do it through the lens and the eyes and the focus of the bands and the artists and the employees and all that kind of stuff. And I sit down with Brandon about once a week and talk about how all that stuff went down, and it's just been so much fun. It feels so good. So if you have any ties to that scene at all, Christian, punk, indie, emo, whatever it is, this podcast will make you feel nice. So please go subscribe to the Labeled podcast, the stories, rumors, and legends of Tooth and Nail Records, and join our open, free Facebook group for anybody who has any, who ever had any involvement as a fan or an artist or anything. There's tons of great people in there. We swap stories, talk about stuff, and it helps make the podcast. So just find that on Facebook. It's called the Labeled podcast group, and then find the podcast and listen to it. You'll love it. And if you already listen to it and like it, just recommend it to a friend. That's all I can ask. Tell your old bandmates. Tell the people you used to go to shows with. Let's all listen to the Labeled podcast together. It'll be fun. This week's episode is about the rise and collapse of Cornerstone Festival. And then we're on to MXPX after that. So go get it. It's self-justification and excuses in a way. And something rings there for me about when you're saying labeling and grouping. I think another type of label and group that should be paid attention to in the same way is diagnosis. I think those are also groups and categories. I think when you're talking about depression, Tourette's, autism, anger, whatever the things are that can be at some point called a disorder, as soon as you can have a name for it, as soon as you can call it something, it's a trade-off. Like, it's nice to have support or be known as a group, and there's something good about it.
You become
But there's also, it reduces you to something and gives you a built-in, you know, and people will say that, you know, and it's a built-in excuse.
It is.
And I texted this to Toby last night, and I'm sure somebody said it or said it in a better way, but there's no such thing as an excuse that you don't use if you have it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and and the more you put people in categories, you think of them that way and they think of themselves that way, or a damaged person or abused person.
Tourette syndrome, dude.
I mean.
Yeah. And I've had to work to break that off of myself. But I knew that it was peculiar and interesting. So I went with it as part of my ego. And now that I'm trying to break it off of myself, I'm like, okay, how do I allow Ryan to be here rather than Ryan and Tourette's? But so I'm working on integrating those two.
That's
things.
Right.
Is there a chance? Do you ever see, and I'm not saying this the right way, like, do you see Tourette's and other people, or like, do you think of it as a condition straightforward, or do you mm-hmm. think it there's a sliding scale or a spectrum or something like that?
You know how you had the impulse and you think it and feel it? There's a, I heard Jordan Peterson talking about how orangutans grunt and have these visceral responses to different things in their environment. And Homo sapiens have been, as we've evolved, have had a some sort of guard on that and some sort of rationale that you wouldn't automatically do that for everything. And he referred to people in Tourette's as that not being present. So I'm wondering if, and that was always interesting. And if I'm butchering that, I'm butchering that. But I don't know, man. It's any impulse that you have, like if you can really be honest with yourself on, okay, why do I have to turn the dial that many times? Why do I have to straighten this microphone two times and then kind of move my back in a different way? Like those are these impulses and obsessions to make you feel comfortable, and to a point they're okay, but it's like, that's not what I mean. To a point they're benign, but there's a point that it reaches that it interrupts your daily life, you know, and that mm-hmm. gets hard to deal with, but you keep moving on, you keep going, you know?
I mean, syndrome itself is an issue. The term syndrome, I don't think people get it exactly.
Right.
I don't know if you want to speak to that instead of me, but I feel like people think of syndrome as a genetic disease or something.
A syndrome is a disorder that they do not have a cure for and they don't know much about. So you're mm-hmm. you're floating around in kind of, you know, space trying to figure out how to manage this holding sand aspect of a disorder.
Yeah, but syndromes don't necessarily have to have a physical basis. They're like a set of symptoms too.
Good call.
Designated. Like it's not necessarily a disease or something. It's just a set of behaviors that have this thing. And then since it's become disordered or problematic and it's no longer benign, we're labeling it a syndrome and we're going to deal with it as such. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good.
And people hear that as, oh, disease person. I mean, that's not really syndrome. Meaning, everybody has these impulses. They're benign to a point and then there aren't. There's a couple of things I'm really interested to talk about. I do want to make sure when we talk about the album you said next Friday, let's say the date of that because this airs next week. So is that last Friday? Let's get the date right. It may be available now.
It's not, depending on when this comes out.
But the release date is what, though?
The 11th.
Calendar date.
Friday the 11th.
Yeah, the 11th.
So it's out now, then. So out this album, tell us the name of it again. I know it's on Spotify.
It's called Make It Perfect. Make It Perfect.
Make It Perfect by Ryan Rado is on Spotify. I am happy to talk about that more, too. But before we run out of time, I know we had mentioned already two other things that are interesting. I'm interested in if we could talk about your faith a little bit. Toby said that you were down to talk about
marijuana. I've been smoking a lot of marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
it's cool that you brought that up.
You brought it up.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
But when we were talking on the phone, I was like, man, this is so interesting. Well, there's a couple things. One, like you're an artist, a painter.
I am, yeah.
And you are doing really well with that in a sense of like you might even be there's some new opportunities and when you were talking about that you just said like you've been smoking a lot of weed or some weed or
some weed
and some weed and yeah how's that affecting your brain like is this something new?
Well, it's on and off. And I want to get to the point of knowing, do I really need it? Not need it. Why do I gravitate toward it during certain times of my life? And I started smoking weed because it was rebellious and it was fun. And being high is fun, man.
Really
and,
fun.
It's blast, right? So, but then you just become a crispy critter in a way. And you feel like you have to have it to operate. So the point where I stopped, I haven't hit that in, yo, let's hit it, dog. Anyway, I haven't smoked weed in probably a month now. And I started to think and believe that I could not make my art without it. And when I realized that, I'm like, okay, that's not going to happen because I am, the weed takes me out. And if I focus and allow myself to have fun with this art and be stressed and work as a sober human with it, with all the emotions, the deeper my art becomes. And I'm not saying that I love making art when I'm high. I love it because I don't think, and it's pure subconscious, and sometimes that's mush. But then I'll come back when I'm sober the next day and edit what I've made. And yeah. then I'll trying that was a really fun experiment. But I'm glad that I can see that I don't have to have it to make good art.
But smoking weed, so you don't think of smoking weed as enhancement?
Oh, man.
I mean, like when if you smoke a joint or whatever and mm-hmm. then go to paint.
Mm-hmm. I did.
You don't think that's authentic?
I think it is something you can play with, but then I think it becomes a crutch. And you asked if it was mm-hmm. enhancing. I think it's enhancing, but I guess it depends on what you want to enhance. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. it's like if I want to be out of my body and head and allow whatever to flow with the intoxicant in my brain, that's one way of making art and that's one way of living. Mm-hmm. But if I want to make art that I am fully present with, then I have to rely on the spirit of truth and the spirit of God as I perceive it, to work through all these emotions and deal with all of the pain that happens with making art. And I'm not being overly dramatic with that. It's tough to make art. You try to make a record, it is painful, you know, and it's frustrating. Yeah. So it's like, I appreciate.
So you think there's value mm-hmm. in being present in that frustration?
Yeah. And I also think that, yes, totally. Because you learn, sorry, touch your boobie. Like I also
I got to make fun of Toby's tits.
I know, right? You just touched my boob twice.
But I don't know. There's also value in seeing what happens when you're intoxicated and try to make art. You know, it's not one thing or another, you know, and right. I think the church gets bent on like, well, if you smoke weed, you're automatically in this box. And if you do this, you're automatically in this box. Yeah, that sounds great. But it's like, what about your mm-hmm. emotional instability and how maybe you don't realize that you're abusing people when you're sober?
Joey, you when know? You are super high on weed and write a sermon, is it better?
Tight.
Oh, no. God. Matt.
I always teach about the transfiguration whenever. Right.
Ooh, I like
Matt,
that.
Matt.
Just certain types of sermons. Matt, you're kind of like Ryan was saying.
You Matt, know? You're our resident pothead. And I do think that's interesting. Like being present in the hardship of creating is real. Mm. Like that, mm-hmm. not totally sober and going, this is hard. I'm trying to just in this reality that I'm in this moment mm-hmm. moment that I'm doing this. But Matt, you smoke a shitload of weed and you write music. You mm-hmm. think it's an enhancement?
Well, I agree with Ryan on it. I try to measure it better than shitload.
Let's define it, Matt. How
word
much
I use for that's about, not exactly the dose.
About a kilo, yeah, a kilo a week.
Yeah, but I don't know.
An addiction amount.
Whatever's the addiction amount, whatever that amount is.
That's easy to hit.
But I use it. I use it. I enjoy it, and I also use it in two very specific ways that cool. I find productive. Well, three really, but I like to play.
Wait,
and
you
write
use
music.
Weed in three productive ways? No yeah, weed I'll, smoker I'll, has ever said that in the history of the okay. world.
I use weed in three ways productive ways. I'll give you the three helpful uses.
I'm
to
not
me,
making fun of you, Matt. I want to know what
and
you
And then
have
I'll
to
agree
say.
With Ryan that it's definitely something you got to prevent from being a crutch. I agree.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
But the three productive ways, from my point of view, and I'm not even including like enjoying it and chilling out and relaxing as yeah. one of them. I'm
you got
three
four ways you use weed? Good God. Okay. Matt Carter has four productive uses of weed.
That make you hungry, dog.
Well, I definitely like to try to compose music that mm-hmm. way. Like, it's but fun. I like to set up a recording session, edit it, go through it, get everything right, work, you know, get it and everything feeling great, mm-hmm. then get high, and then and then just let it rip for an hour,
love
and
it.
Then go home, and then yep. the next day I'll come back in and see what of that like Ryan said was mush or was good. I think that's very useful, but I can't like edit or think or do a bunch of detailed tracking that way. It's just completely the wrong tool for that.
Right.
So no, good point.
I don't use it for that, but I may have impulses that I wouldn't have or would get filtered out by my very cognitive part of my brain otherwise. So there's something else to get at there. Also, in my thinking, and for this podcast, I use it, not on air, but I like to walk around. This is what I do. I get high at night, and I pace around the yard or the house and think deeply. Yeah. And I like to do that. I might listen to a podcast or an audiobook, but then I wind up pausing it, and I'll just be thinking about stuff, and then I'll take notes and write down. Mm. And this is very funny because it happened last night. I was looking back through my notes to because you know what people always say about people that get high, that it's always nonsense, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, I like to think deeply and have good thoughts there and try to write them down and record them. Whatever.
That's good. I like that for sure.
And so, and then see if they make sense. So I was going through my notes last night because I was like, oh, we're going to do some podcasting this week. I'm going to see if I've got any good ideas in here. And I found a bunch of ideas and I was devastated when I read like 10 in a row and I was like, this is fucking nonsense.
Now you had some good shit in there.
For a second. I was like, I think it's like good impulses, but I cannot believe how bad the words are, and I'm confused. And could I not have taken the time to say what I was trying to say? Because this is so crazy. Some of these words, I can't even figure out what I was saying.
That's so good.
And then when I got through going through 10 of those,
so good.
I realized that that was in a folder.
Hamburger
that I set up
funny.
Well, hang on. No, it's not that. But here's why. I got through the whole list of them, and I was super bummed. I was like, oh my gosh, I just get high and do nonsense, apparently.
Right.
But then I realized those were only the notes that I did voice dictation on, so the text-to-speech was all fucked up.
Oh, incredible.
And then I found all my notes where I had typed them, and they were terrific.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Seriously.
It's gold.
Brilliant.
But the voice-to-text that I've been trying out, it had so many errors in it that I thought I'd lost my mind.
You should find a creative way to put those together and make a little story about it, buddy. Maybe not.
It's like Seinfeld writing down that joke idea in the middle of the night. He wakes up in the middle of the night, writing it down, and then he can't read it the next day.
Oh, right. Well, I have a reading problem.
Yeah. He's asking, like, what does this mean?
And it was brilliant.
Right.
Yeah, he's like, this is the best joke I've ever written, but it's like 3 a.m. and he had a weird TV on.
Oh, my God.
No, but I do actually have tons of many, many ideas that I've shared and seem to really work well come from that mental state for me. It's just a way to focus, and it's partly checking out, but checking out from everything else so that I can do it's just it for some reason it helps my particular brain chemistry. The other one is it gives me paranoia, and I need some of that. I live too risky. I make too many bad decisions. I've got kids. I've got stuff, and I'll get high and realize, oh my God, I've been neglecting this, or what if this happens? I gotta get life insurance, you know? And so that helps me.
Yes. I didn't even think of that, dude. Like I'll be behaving in a way in my sober life that subconsciously there's intimations that it is deadly, but then when I get high, I'm leveled with this anvil of analysis of my behavior.
Like,
I'm
that
like, oh
was
my God,
risky
I gotta stop
behavior.
That.
Why did I do
that? Good call on that.
I think the best thing about marijuana is it reveals you. Like, it's not, you don't smoke marijuana and that and the marijuana made you some way. It just, it does something and this is what I am. Like, the times that I've smoked marijuana, I go, oh, this anxiety or fear or worry I have, that's just always there. I'm just suppressing it or it's not totally. I mean,
which is helpful.
It's shocking. Like, there's been times where I believe, obviously, you can smoke marijuana and do nothing. Mm-hmm. But if you really take marijuana as a drug, the same way as you do anxiety medicine or aspirin
nicotine,
or whatever. Ibuprofen, whatever. Yep. If you use it properly, it might actually be something really valuable. Like, not just goofball. Yeah. Now, at the same time, I love how happy and fun it can be with marijuana.
That's what I was about to say. Are you saying my true self is that Disturbed singing Sound of Silence is the most hilarious thing that's ever
it's
happened?
It's pretty damn hilarious.
Is
beautiful.
That my true self? That's the only thing I remember about smoking weed.
When did you smoke weed?
Right
before this podcast.
No.
Dude, you're doing great, bro.
No. I've done it with Emery a little bit, and I either am dying or listening to Disturbed.
Right.
And it's the most amazing, hilarious thing that's ever happened. Either way, I feel totally out of control.
Well, that and your other dark mental stuff is both real. Those are both you, 100%.
Well, that's a good point.
Both
like
are
a dream.
You.
It's like you're dreaming, too. Yeah, that's good.
It's crazy, so, but that's true.
Yeah, fuck that.
So, Toby, you're saying that your problems come to the surface?
I'm saying that, like, for example, there's been times where I smoked weed and then talked to somebody, and I started thinking all these, what are they saying? What do they mean?
Yeah.
Why did they say it that way?
Right.
And then I'm able now, like when I smoked weed when I was in high school, I didn't know anything. Nobody explained anything. I just smoked like a whole joint because I paid $15 or $20 for it, which was a shitload of money.
That's really good.
I mean, when I was, seriously, when I'm 17 years old, I spent $20 on a bag of weed. I smoked it all.
Nice.
No matter what.
Who'd you get it from?
What am I going to do? Kidding. Take it home? Or get caught with it or something?
Yeah,
no.
Right.
So I smoked the whole thing, and I have no clue. Nobody's explained anything to me. And so I thought marijuana makes you paranoid.
Yeah.
Right? But now, as a 42-year-old, I go, no, I'm paranoid. I'm paranoid. It's not weed. Weed isn't paranoid.
Oh, that's good.
Toby is paranoid. And so I start it's really been kind of awesome in a way. There's been times where, like, I've been high and talk to somebody, I went, oh, I'm hearing this, like, because of the, you know how everything slows down?
Mm-hmm.
I go, like I'm hearing this, and I'm thinking or saying that they're saying this to me. And then I go, wait a minute, they're not, and it doesn't matter, and we're friends, and this is, like, even with guys on tour or whatever.
That's incredible.
Like, I'm sitting with Devin or something, and then I think Devin's saying something that might be snarky or mean or he's harsh or he doesn't like me. And I go, why doesn't Devin like me right now? And I go, wait a minute, Toby, Devin's not saying shit. This is all Toby. just said, hey, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this.
Two words or something. And I think he was being short or curt, and he's not. It's just Devin.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How much of that can you sustain in your life of having that stress of paranoia? You see what I'm saying?
Well, for me, I actually appreciate it because then what I've been able to do since I've been able to realize, wait a minute, it's Toby, not a drug.
Mm.
I've been able to go, oh, Toby, you're being stupid. And then I think that infiltrates sober life or whatever you want to call that. But I mean, I have the ability to smoke marijuana at any time and I don't really care about it. I could smoke marijuana every day or right now or whatever. Like, it was really, I mean, I'll just say it. It was amazing. We played a show, and I won't say what city it was. I don't know if it probably doesn't matter, but we were in North Carolina. And these two guys
incredible
brought a giant bag. They were like, hey,
what's up?
Okay, this is the coolest moment a fan of Emory Band I've ever had in my life. I am not shitting you. We're sitting on the bus after a show.
I love it.
These two guys, they knock on the door. They walk in. Usually when fans knock on the bus door, you're like, oh, no, what's this? You got to figure it out. Yeah. Are they going to hang out? Whatever. They walk on the bus. They have a bag. And they say, hey, listen, we just wanted to bring you guys this. They each had two cases of 24 beers, like 24 cases of beer. They brought it on. They said, hey, listen. Thank you guys so much for the show. We loved it. And they left.
Oh, that's so
tight. And then
we
opened the bag, and it was the most edibles of marijuana I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. And they were all medical and packaged, not home-baked.
Yeah, I mean, not like goofball, not like homemade. It said the milligrams, everything. I couldn't believe it. And they left, and I was like,
that's cool.
I can't believe it. If they would have stayed, I would have been very happy. They left even. They even left as a gift.
That's pretty cool.
As a gift, they didn't hang around.
That's a real gift.
I mean, if I ever meet those two dudes again, they can have any merch. Nice. I'll write them a song, whatever it takes.
They can hang out next time. That's fine.
I want them to go on the full tour with us because they're the coolest fucking guys I've ever met in my life. I didn't know it at the moment. In the moment, I didn't know how cool they were. I mean, it was shocking. Like, just to bring, I mean, I don't even know how much money that cost. I mean, that stuff we couldn't even finish it. It was that much.
Where's it?
There wasn't anything even there. We're saying a lot here on this podcast, but I'll just be honest.
That's okay.
I just thought it was so amazing.
Everybody, I checked the analytics. People usually turn it off about 7 minutes.
So okay, perfect. 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 Anyway, two things I know. One, get Ryan Rado's new record. What's it called?
Oh, make it perfect.
Make it perfect. And two, if you ever want to like make a band just think you're the coolest person in the world, walk in, drop something off, and leave. I promise you, I'll get your name tattooed on my body. Incredible. Because I couldn't think of a cooler person. Anyway, all that to say, I am still nervous of edibles.
They're creepers, dude.
They're like they'll psychedelic and wild. Yeah.
The last time I did an edible was playing for Matt and Toby in Sacramento, and I almost walked off that stage.
Damn. You lost your mind.
Yeah. Almost did not make it through that one.
But what's going through your mind there?
That I just had to get out.
But you had to get out why, though? Like, what?
Made weed.
No, because it was you.
But all right, I don't know, but that's what I'm saying. It connected me with a part of myself that I don't want to go to.
Yeah, copy that.
But alcohol does not do that.
Oh, I know. Isn't that crazy? That's
and I wish I could not be addicted to this.
Damn. Oh, God.
Right now. Yeah. I would kill to not be addicted
to Miller Lite.
But marijuana
is on the can of beer. There's a parallel with alcohol, though. Like when somebody gets drunk certain amount of times and, they get belligerent and mean, that's real.
Yeah,
that comes out. That's inside.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's what I, but I never act out when I'm drunk. Really.
Wish you would.
You know what I mean? But I'm just saying, I don't act out. I don't get mean.
Do you get isolated and depressed?
Later, not when I'm drunk.
Okay.
That's the funny thing about weed, though. Like, seriously, if you see somebody drink too much, they vomit or they get slimy and they're crying or they're whatever, you know? With weed, they're just off in a corner and you're like, okay.
I've never felt like,
I love it. They just in a corner by themselves. You're like, okay, so I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I've never felt like my life was ending with alcohol, though. I've known, like, okay,
that's
this
the trick.
But, like,
you thought your life was ending.
The last time I used
my
weed,
life is ending.
I hit a vape pen on this last tour. We had a day off in LA.
That'll get you.
And I hit a vape pen, and I ended up in the Rainbow Room in LA in the bathroom for about an hour and a half.
Oh shit!
In the stall,
you're kidding?
By myself, trying to come down.
That sucks.
You were that high?
Yes.
It takes longer than that.
It was awful.
You were just in a stall.
I was in the stall at the Rainbow. I was just thinking.
What were you thinking?
I want.
Right. Yeah. Good call.
I tried to go sit out on the sidewalk on Hollywood, whatever Boulevard, Sunset Boulevard. I was sitting out there for a while, and that freaked me out.
Everybody else is stumped.
So then I just went back into the Rainbow Room. We had a booth. We were bawling. We
had a booth
at the Rainbow Room.
Bawling in the Rainbow Room,
seeing famous chefs. Like,
right.
It was cool. And then I'm just like, I got to get out of here. And I tried the sidewalk on Sunset Boulevard, and I was like, no, I got to be enclosed.
See me.
I thought I was going to puke. And I sat in the stall for like an hour and a half by myself.
Were you talking to yourself? Maybe.
No, and TJ came in to check on
me. Oh, that's the guy you want to come in there.
Like, he was like, you good, man? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm in here. You know.
So many people that had this shit were so mad at you.
Well, it was the upstairs bathroom near where they did the karaoke.
Oh, okay.
But it was just awful. I felt so out of control of my own brain. That's what I'm saying with alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
I never felt out of control.
Wow. That's scary.
Here's what I think is actually pretty interesting is I know a lot of people that
stuff has happened at the Rainbow Room, by the way, in my life. Yes. The Rainbow Room in Hollywood where like Guns N' Roses and all these people were so much stuff of my life.
Yeah, part of me,
there.
I was like, this is pretty fucking cool.
It's fucking amazing, right? I've sat at a Rainbow Room with Ron Jeremy playing Amazing Grace on the harmonica. Monica,
he should be playing that. Oh, that's incredible.
That's insane.
I'd love to meet Ron Jeremy.
Go ahead, Pastor Joey.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling me Pastor, by the way. No, I was going to say how often I have heard someone say something along the lines of, oh, yeah, I'm feeling good right now, or I'm prepared, or blah, 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 blah. I took Xanax.
Oh, yeah.
And I have asked people, like, what are the results, the effects of taking that? And it seems pretty potent. Like it is like effectual with your behavior, your feeling and all of that. And no one thinks anything of it.
Yep.
Just because there's a prescription added to it. And yet I think never had Xanax before. I think there would be a pretty significant less of a high by taking a puff of a joint, right?
Well, think about the mysticism involved with marijuana. I mean, you don't know the effect that's going to happen. A lot of times people get high. You can try to boil it down, but it's like it's also technically illegal in most of the area, but then you get this prescription, you can go to the gatekeeper, which is the doctor, and you can tell him that you want it and they'll give it to you. And it's institutionalized. And also it comes in a solid pill form. When you look at this, and this is a little deeper into it, but when you look at weed, it's plant. So it's like there's a serious like unknown about it. You know what I'm saying? It's not like boiled down into this concrete little pill that you can take. It's like it has a lot of different avenues that it can affect, you know, and it seems uncontrolled, you know?
Yeah,
that's just my take on it. But
it is interesting how this is all going to shake up, especially like in the church world. I mean, a good friend of mine pastors a church in Colorado, and at some point, I just don't think any of this is going to be a big deal at all. It's going to take a good while in the South specifically, but it will take a while.
I don't know. I would like to semi-predict that it might go faster than you think. Like, I mean, I think the fastest cultural change ever was probably gay marriage. Like, holy shit, a lot of people changed their mind on that fast.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
yeah.
And so you're I think you might see more fast movement on issues like that. I don't necessarily think that, but so far you hear states talking about legalization, and as soon as that thing I never touched weed in my life until I could look at the milligrams and buy it at the store with all the nice people next to my house that I can walk to.
Why do you think it'll go quicker?
Did you just feel safer with it or something?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to talk to a drug dealer and roll joints. And
yeah, but that's
I'm
fun.
I'm not doing any of that crap. I mean, that's not
a drug
me.
Dealer.
That's not
a drug dealer will hate Matt. Yeah. A drug dealer can't sell drugs to you. He would hate you.
I mean, I'm not doing any of that. I'm not hanging out with people in tie-dyed shirts and black lights and shit.
You should,
damn
it.
I'm not doing that. So if I could go to the stores in Washington are just great. And you just see every mom and there. It's just that it got normal so fast. Mm-hmm. And then people can decide what's good and bad and right and all that.
That's
kind
the
of
point,
stuff.
Matt.
But it
That's
happened fast. And I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's just crazy.
I mean, you know what? You're exactly right. The same way as if you see a mom go buy a six-pack of beer, you don't think anything weird.
Well, yeah.
So, what's this weed thing? I mean, the problem is the information we've been given is scary and stupid and wrong.
Well, it is a psychoactive drug. You know what I'm saying? It is like a hallucinogen in a way too. You know what I mean?
But I mean, still at the same point. I mean, how much is three beers for
good call.
110 pound mom or something?
Totally,
you know what I mean?
Totally. Man.
So I think the big thing is just more information, and I actually do believe. The better the information, the more experience people have with it, it probably will be better.
And you got to be responsible with it, just like everything else.
But you quit. You know?
Well, for the time being, I've talked to my buddy up in Nashville, a good friend of mine, and I was like, dude, you're in Franklin tonight. You got that stuff with you? So it's always lingering there. I might do it tonight. I don't know. But when I'm doing it all the time, man, I start the paranoia, because I'm prone to that anyway. It just makes it worse. You know?
Can you tell the difference between your art, like your paintings on weed or off weed?
On weed or off weed. I love that. I should wear a t-shirt that said currently off weed.
On or off. Like the thing is where the dishes are
currently
clean
off.
Yeah,
weed.
Right.
On and off weed.
I don't know. Well, I was real quick. I'll say this. I was dealing with a pretty serious, borderline problem with infidelity in August over Instagram from someone that messaged me from my last podcast here.
No way.
Not kidding. And hear me out when I say this, man.
Was it Tyler Wicks?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. Tyler, hit me up, bro. Hit me up. But what I'm saying is, like, it was through Instagram, and I'm not saying it was not beneficial, because I learned a lot, and it was really difficult to have this psychosexual relationship with a person online and break half of my brain in half. And while trying to hide this from my wife, eventually I told it to my wife, and we've went to counseling and talked about this, but I was dealing with shame and guilt and acting in ways that I feel like my shadow would act, you know, and the darker parts of me. And I had that stress involved with making art. So it's almost like I could just smoke weed and have everything be cool, and I'm in a good place, and I might get something different than if I had some sort of serious stress happening in my life with marijuana. Do you see what I'm saying? So the art that I made out of that time is brilliant, in my opinion. It's the best work I've ever done, and I hope I can recreate it. But allow me to say this: like, going through that time was, I learned a lot, and I cannot blame this person for anything, because I was equally at play. And I, in a way, this is kind of like a confession of some really poor behavior on my part. But, and it worked into the question. Thank you for letting me elaborate on that. So that's the answer. Silence.
We'll just let that sit.
Yeah, no. You can let it
Brian,
sit.
Brian, it's really is a pleasure to hear.
Oh, so, I mean, you too, buddy.
You know, that's, you, I almost want to say that you're beyond us in just doing it and hanging, letting it be out there. You made me more confident to be able to say what I am feeling. And I feel committed to that as a general rule. And you pushed me even farther to be more honest.
Well,
thank
dude,
you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. And I got to say that I was pretty intimidated by your personality coming on here. And I've made many imaginary conversations with myself, posing as me and you before this podcast, because
how did you picture that going?
I thought we were going to have a boxing match of ideas, but that was my own like defense mechanism. But I'm really thankful. I'd be
happy to do one of those as a one-on-one if you want to.
I would love to. But I'm really thankful that and grateful that of your personality as well, because I don't know you that well. And Joey, I don't know you, but I know of you through Luke Yates.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
You know him?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
who's Luke?
He went on tour with you.
He was our
hair
merch guy.
Yep.
Luke.
Oh, I didn't know
he's
his last name.
Awesome. On the BC awesome road trip. And he's helping me with this album and all that stuff. And
Luke
and
is so awesome.
He's so cool, dude. He's so beyond his years, man. And he told me a little bit about you and some little, all good faith, all like good things. And I was anxious to meet you. And Reba, let me just go around the horn. I thought your name was Reba. Did you ever get that?
I'm Reba.
But I love that. That's a really cool name. And I don't know much about you, and that's all there is to it, but good to see your face on here.
If
Aaron,
you want to know more about Reba, you booyah can join the Beast. God, I got the hiccups.
Is that beers, bro?
I think it's because of the beer.
Hey, bro.
I've had a few beers.
Incredible.
But if you want to know more, if,
oh boy. Oh gosh. That's the real Toby coming out.
Is it? Fuck you,
these
Reba
are the impulses.
You bitch. You mother. No, if you want to know more about Reba, join the BC Club. She did two episodes.
Ooh, good point.
Two bonus episodes that you get. Godly.
Did you say bonus?
Boner. Two bonus. God, this hiccups thing is killing me. Two bonus episodes with Reva. Matt, can you explain what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, well, Reva did it, and she focused on her. She took questions from the BC Club and had Melanie host her on there, and they got to talking and a lot of personal stuff about Reva and commentary on faith and state of affairs. And I mean, I wouldn't know. I hadn't listened yet, but I heard it was.
Yeah, yeah. I heard it was awesome.
To try to sum that up.
Reva, what are your episodes about?
Well, surprisingly, Matt did know.
Mm-hmm. I have ways of knowing things.
Nice.
Yeah, I just asked the BC Club if they had any questions for me, and they actually had a ton of questions, so it was pretty fun. I asked Melanie to come on and talk to me so I wasn't just talking to myself. And then, we just went through some of the questions that they asked and got into moving to Nashville, getting a puppy,
how you guys have
changed my faith, all that kind of stuff.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
All right, so join the BC Club so you can hear more. You get more episodes. You get two extra episodes a week.
Hey, and if let me make a little plug out there in listener land. If you're interested in my art and my visual art, and you would like a piece of my visual art, contact me and we can make a deal for real.
How can they contact you?
You can get on Instagram. It's at Ryan_Rado. RYAN_RADO. And you can email me at ryanrado@gmail.com. And you can call me at 931-286-03. Now, wouldn't you just hate?
Welcome to our world. We stay the best. We're some decent guys.